Hello friends, just an extremely quick one at the start. I know I always say that, and then I'm rarely extremely quick, but just to say hello, we hope you're well. We hope if you are staying socially distant and shielded, your spirits are remaining as high as possible in these forever odd times. You know what often happens at the start here. Well, back at the start of the year, we told you about exciting plans for live shows, but ho-ho! That business isn't happening until at least 2021. What we are going to ask you to do this week is specifically, if you have listened to us either for the first time or never before, if you can leave us a cheeky review on iTunes or Castbox or whatever podcatcher of choice you have, that would be really useful. Now, I don't want you to think that this is us being incredibly sensitive snowflakes and taking things personally, but a couple of weeks ago, we asked for that as a nice, easy, free way that you could help out our podcast, and the fates decided to rain on us our first ever one-star review. As a podcast about the worst things in the world, it seems only appropriate, but I don't know whether that person listened to our episode from a couple of weeks ago and went back to the beginning and then got angry with the podcast, because they disliked us for two reasons. One, me and Barry have the temerity to laugh at each other, enjoy each other's jokes, and generally be delighted by each other's company. That apparently, very disappointing. And also, Bobby Boots NC, and I'm going to say that NC probably stands for either North Carolina, and that's a state that hasn't covered itself in glory recently, or no comedy. Also, didn't like a joke that our guest Beck Hill made in episode 2. Now listen, if you've made it all the way to episode 170, you've probably forgotten about it already. But if you happen to be someone who's joining us for the first time who likes pitter-pattering back through our back catalogue, we've re-listened to it. And it's a joke Beck makes about her own appearance with all the necessary caveats in place to make sure that anyone who might get offended shouldn't get offended from it. So what we're saying is, A, Bobby Boots NC, go fuck yourself. Secondly, you don't really understand how comedy works. Thirdly, we, and by we, I mean definitely me more than Barry, really ought to grow up and be above this sort of thing. But more importantly, fourthly, if you've enjoyed the show, you want to help us out and stop an unnecessary rant like this happening again, head out there, give us a cheeky little review, clearly 5 stars in order to shore up our fragile egos, and it'd be very helpful indeed. This was yet another great fun podcast. It was a double Patreon episode with both a Patreon suggestion and a Patreon judge on it. If you think a review isn't enough for me, you know where to go, patreon.com/worstfootforward, and chuck us whatever sweet hard-earned cash you have in these, I was going to say post-apocalyptic, but it's definitely pre-apocalyptic times. But let's hope we can keep the podcast going until COVID turns into some sort of mutating zombie virus. On that cheery July summer evening thought, sit back, relax, pour yourself a glass of something delightful, and enjoy the show. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and dogs and ill-bought lizards, to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week uncovers the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find us strolling around our very own budget Worst Foot Zoo, as we ensure that we know our pachyderms from our pachydonts, how many humps a camel is supposed to have, and exactly when the correct time to smile at a crocodile is. Quick answer from the survey, not straight after saying your mother would make a delightful set of luggage. And that, my friends, is why I've typed out this introduction one-handed. And with me is the over-familiar naturalist to my increasingly irate stingray, Mr. Barry McStay.
Here, boy, come on, Ben, sit. Stop it. Stop looking down there, Ben. Stop it. I told you not to, we've got a podcast to host. you're the wag to my dog, aren't you?
You're the dog that I wag you.
Yeah. Well, you're like, if you were a dog, you'd definitely be like a King Charles Spaniel, I think, with the hair.
Oh, absolutely. But the problem is that I would then be allergic to myself.
Yes.
Which I feel like is the most Jewish thing to be.
a dog.
We've talked about it on the show before, I think, how you got kittens called Bob and Edmund, and within a week you were in hospital because of the The fur allergies.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like my own little kitteny Chernobyl. Did you have any pets as a kid?
Yeah, we had cats and dogs. We had a dog called Radar, who I was very fond of, who was a black lab slash something else cross.
Instead of woofing, did you just go beep?
No, yeah, well, actually, it was my mum's favourite character in MASH was Radar. So that was why he was called that. And then we had a cat called Minou, which is, I think, what the French call when, like, we say puss puss or come here. The Minou is what the French would say. She was like 21 when she died. She was really old.
Oh, wow. What were you feeding her?
Just normal cat food, but I think I don't know, maybe the air is really good in where my parents are from.
Well, do you know what I think it is? Obviously, famously, the Queen Mother was famously long-lived, and she was into gin and horse racing, and your parents own horses, and we all thought it was the gin that kept her alive, but no, it was the endlessly watching the most tedious sport on earth.
We do watch golf as well, so maybe it's that too, like...
Oh, well, that'll really keep a cat going, because, like, follow the ball, yeah. Follow the ball, in the hole.
And, you know, how do you get rewards in golf? Birdies, eagles, albatrosses, it's got everything a bird would want.
Yeah, I think we've cracked it.
Yeah, whereas dogs, all about lacrosse.
Yeah. Let me introduce our guest this week. Our guest this week started performing stand-up in 2013, built up his reputation on the London circuit, and in 2017 won the prestigious King Gong competition at the Comedy Store. He now performs at comedy clubs around the UK and Ireland with quick wit and, it says here, an aggressive charm. Right now, I can't tell if he wants to punch me or fuck me, and to be fair, I don't mind either way. He now performs at numerous vegan events, but then again, he's also a former zookeeper, so clearly he's been gotten to by the animal lobby and is in the pocket of big game, presumably the kangaroo's pockets. Apparently, he's also done TV warm-up for Gfinity Esports on BT Sports. If you don't know what that is, well, that's where people play competitive video games for money. Presumably, our guest answered the call of duty for this engagement, which lasted about a fortnight, at the end of which they all went to the pub, G. He was and thank you to the, like, 10% of listeners at home who'll have gotten what those jokes were just about. He was described by comic and podcaster Jarlath Regan as one of the funniest and tallest comedians he's ever seen. However, we're recording on Skype and he's only about 6 inches tall on my screen. So let's hope Jarlath was at least half right. Please welcome Ryan Dalton.
Hello, thanks for having me.
How are you doing? Yeah, good. Yes, we've both gone for, listeners can't see, we've both gone for quite like Hawaiian shirt looks.
We have. Well, that is 80% of my wardrobe. So, nice. Is this, how many do you own? Are you a Hawaiian shirt lover?
I think I bought one because I saw lots of people wearing them and I thought I should be able to, you know, if there's a bandwagon, I want to have at least one ticket to get on it.
Cheap.
Yeah.
You're such a cheap.
From viewing this, it basically looks like if you took Barry and dipped him in some water, then he would grow into Ryan.
You were a zookeeper in London Zoo?
No, in Chessington Zoo at the World of Adventure. So I was a zookeeper there for a couple of years, and then I went off into the education of the zoo. So I was working in kind of writing all the public talks for the zoo, writing and managing the team, and really pushing the conservation information to the guests to make sure that they know what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Right, sorry, I thought you meant that you were teaching the penguins physics.
That was part of it, Ben.
They've got to know about friction in order to be able to slide in the best way into the pool again.
It was an incredible job. I did work with a range of species when I was there. I started in the aquarium, went on to the carnivore section, and then went on to the primate section. So I did kind of a long span of a wide variety.
I mean, that sounds, from a very anthropocentric point of view, like you were slowly promoted through the species.
It sounds like I was slowly evolving. That's what it sounds
like. Eventually, you got to be a primate.
Yeah, if you stuck around long enough, would you get to look after the gaseous five-dimensional life forms that oversaw the zoo?
The hovercrafts in the distance. I never got there, but I left like this. So this is as far as I got.
Oh, yeah. For people who don't know, Ryan has got beautiful, long, lustrous, I would say Afghan hound type hair.
Yes.
It is very Afghan at the moment. Yeah.
If we're making dogs of all of us, I'm definitely sort of some sort of wiry haired terrier at the moment.
Yeah, you've got a real sort of like mutt vibe about you.
Thank you. It's the nicest thing you've ever said.
You're very welcome. Now, this is a particularly special show because there aren't just three of us kicking around on here. We've got a fourth member of the cast for this episode, and that is one of our Patreon donors, a long-term supporter, Annela Seddon, a professor, associate professor Annela Seddon, who has been donating $10 a month, and that gives us the right to sit as a bewigged judge on this show, and she will decide whether me, Barry, or Ryan has picked the correct world's worst pet. Now, Annela is one of the number of our listeners who we have met in person. She came and was an audience member at our live show, you know, back in February, remember, before the world turned to cinders and dust. And she, I hope, is the sort of person who's going to get the world back on its feet, not because she is a biochemist, but because she is the director of the Bristol Centre for Functional Nanomaterials. And I imagine that the Bristol Centre for Functional Nanomaterials helps operate the brains of the people who think that pulling down the Edward Colston statue was a bad idea. But when she's not doing that, I imagine that she is going to be behind helping to find the correct sort of nanomaterials that will be able to fight COVID-19. And there, ladies and gentlemen, I have shown a greater knowledge of how to battle this pandemic than our own Prime Minister.
So, hello, Associate Prof. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm not too sure about the bewigged judge bit. I mean, I know it's been a long time since, like, you know, we could have a haircut in lockdown. It's that bad. It's very nice to be here. It's very nice to see kind of behind the curtain as to how this works. So looking forward to seeing the idiocy unfold.
That was the alternate title for the show, to be fair. The idiocy unfolds.
We should ask, we've discovered what dogs me, Barry and Ryan are. What dog do you think you would be?
I mean, I'd like to think something kind of, you know, elegant and kind of, you know, with the ones where you see them running in slow motion and they have the hair kind of flowing behind them. But I'm probably just some sort of slightly irritating poodle.
There's no non-irritating poodles, to be fair.
Well,
I think.
Exactly. It is. That is a bit of a tautology, isn't it? Yeah, I think I'd just, or I'd be something just really annoying and yappy.
Yeah.
It's like, the thing is, poodles have got a lot of backstory because obviously when I was a kid, I thought of poodles as being primped and these incredible sort of coiffured animals, but they're vicious street fighters as well.
Yeah, that, or maybe something, you know, given my hair colour, possibly, you know, some sort of golden retriever, but they have a kind of degree of practicality and intelligence that I'm not totally sure that I'm capable of after 3 months of sitting in my bedroom staring at a screen looking at people on Teams. So, you know, I'm not sure I could help a blind person across the road anymore, put it that way.
Wow, I mean, the impact of lockdown as you has been moral decay, and I like it.
I'm done with it.
Out of interest, are there any non-functional nanomaterials?
Oh, loads.
Okay.
Honestly, Barry, my entire PhD.
Oh, wow. I was just being flippant, but...
pretty much every material I made turned out to be non-functional. No, there are plenty of functional nanomaterials. I'm not sure quite why we added the functional bit in, just to make it sound more jazzy so we get funded. Basically, we're a training centre for PhD students who spend a lot of their time thinking about really cool ways to make new materials that can help in things like healthcare or help in energy applications. So new solar panels, for example, thinking about the really tiny things that go into making really big things.
Amazing.
We do some really cool things like look at how we can 3D print materials, how we can design materials that we can remote control and we can inject into people, obviously when they're very safe. So we have lots of different things, but basically it's all about training our students to be the next generation of really cool scientists.
Amazing. Oh, well, mm-hmm. let's lower the tone, because clearly you're...
Please.
Clearly both very qualified, you at, you know, building the future and Ryan at shoveling up elephant poo. So starting with you, Ryan, what are you worst at in the world?
I'm terrible at sport.
We're on a recent run of people being terrible at sport, actually. What's wrong with your generation of comedians?
I never, ever had any interest or any kind of motivation to do any, unless it was a pub sport, like darts, bowling, snooker, that kind of thing. If you can drink whilst doing it, I'll play it. But I don't, anything where It involves the running, the passing, the coordination. I can't do it. To the point where sports day, I think this was in that year nine or something, we had like the sports day, and one of the games that we would play amongst the year groups was just a quick 45-minute game of football. And I was put in defence because it's the part where you don't really do much. So I was put there. And one of my team members, Danny, passed me the ball. And as he did, the teacher that was coaching us genuinely shouted out, "Oh, Danny, what did you do that for?" But it was just a bad decision.
Surely, as a 6'7" gentleman, darts is easy for you because with your wingspan, you can stand at the hockey and then just place the dart where you want it to be in the dartboard.
Imagine, that would be beautiful, just placing it in there.
Annela, while you're here, why don't we ask you what your terrible ass?
So as a long-time listener, there's been quite a few things that I'm genuinely dreadful at that have been covered by other people. So I thought I'd go for something spectacularly niche, which is I'm incapable of translating the information contained in a weather report into picking the correct clothes to wear for that day.
Oh, I feel you so strongly with that.
So I will see it is going to absolutely throw it down today. So I'll go, brilliant, time for my suede shoes. Just for some reason, the information can't connect between the bits of my brain that do the processing at all. When I first started seeing my long-suffering partner, we went away to Heaton Park to watch the Stone Roses for the weekend. And unbeknownst to me, he packed a separate suitcase containing appropriate clothing that he knew I would forget to bring. And this was within 6 weeks of meeting me. So I think it's something fairly ingrained. He had to buy me a waterproof and some wellies and put them in a bag and then produce them as I was about to go out in shorts and T-shirt in like 5 degree temperatures. So
I can see now why you have tuned into not just the content of this podcast, but also mine and Barry's personalities, because me and Barry have also both married into practicality.
Yes.
This week, again, at the behest of another Patreon donor, Sabeta Matsumoto, we're going to talk about the world's worst pet. And before we get onto that with Barry, the planets have actually aligned a little bit because, Annela, you know Sabeta and work with her as well?
I've not been lucky enough to work with her yet, but we do work in kind of fields of physics that overlap slightly. Sabeta's a theoretical physicist based in the US, and we've been lucky enough to meet at a couple of conferences. And she came over to visit last year, and she does the most incredible work looking at how you can use things like knitting and crochet and fabrics to understand topology. It's really, really interesting. And she's the person who got me into crocheting as well. So.
Beautiful. The knitting physicist is clearly what we need. It's the perfect Sunday afternoon Radio 4 crossover, isn't it?
There's a string theory joke in there, but I won't.
Yeah. Oh, mate, as a professional comedian, myself and Ryan are hanging our heads in shame that the physicist got there before us. But just you wait, the pair of us have got some thoughts on Heisenberg's uncertainty principle that are going to knock anything you've got into a cocked hat.
Are you sure about that?
No, I'm...
Right, before I disgrace myself any further, Barry, what are your thoughts on the world's worst pet?
Snakes. All right, next.
All right.
No, I have a bit more on that, but God. I really want a pet, by the way. I just want to say, I want a cat or a dog, and my husband thinks it's weird to have an animal wandering around the house. but he would go for fish, which die really quickly and have no personality, or rodents whose personality seems to be entirely I am terrified of you, giant, please put me down again. Now, I read about long-lived pets to begin with. Have you heard of Adwaita?
No.
Adwaita
means one and only in Sanskrit, and slightly unconfirmed, but
Adwaita means the one and only in Sanskrit.
Yeah.
It was Adwaita Chesney Hawks.
Yes. No. Chesney Hawks is the one and only Chesney Hawks, and he's a hawk, not, as Adwaita was, a tortoise.
Right.
Adwaita was a giant tortoise, an Aldabra giant tortoise that lived in the Alipore Zoological Gardens in Kolkata, and at the time of his death in 2006, he was believed to be among the longest-lived animals in the world because he is thought to have been born in 1750 and was one of the four tortoises that lived on the estate owned by Clive of India. So, wow. Born in 1750, died in 2006. That's a hell of a lifespan.
Yeah, and obviously, as a denizen of the British Empire, Aduita's statue will be coming down any day.
Any day. If you want to know what, you know, because you always get asked when someone's really old, oh, what's your secret? Aduita lived on a diet of wheat bran, carrots, lettuce, soaked chickpeas, bread, grass, and salt. So there you go.
And guys. A love of horse racing.
And a love of horse racing. Apparently, he was one of several tortoises that were given to Clive following his victory at the Battle of Plassey in 1757, in which the British East India Company defeated the ruler of Bengal and his French allies, thus securing India for Britain in the long run, and everything after was fine. He was transferred to the Alipur Zoo about 100 years later and lived there until his death. It's not entirely clear that this is the same tortoise. There are some people who are like, it's so old, maybe he wasn't that. Maybe he wasn't the same tortoise. But if it can be confirmed, he'll definitely be known to be the oldest living tortoise, or the oldest tortoise of modern times. Longer lived than Harriet, who was Charles, said to be Darwin's tortoise, but definitely was owned by Steve Irwin. And that, yeah. If you're owned by both of those people, that's a pretty cool couple of, like, bookends to your life. and Tui Malila, who is another famous tortoise, born sometime in 1777 and gifted to the royal family of Tonga by Captain Cook on his visit to the island. And Tui Malila was kept by the royal family of Tonga until his death in 1965, so nearly 200 years old as well, and his body's on display at the Royal Palace of Tonga. But do you know what the current living oldest land animal is?
I think I know. I can't remember his name. He's a tortoise that's 188. Yes. Celebrated it 2 days ago or a day ago.
Very, very recently, yes. It's Jonathan the giant tortoise. he's thought to have been born maybe in 1832. Again, with these, they're not entirely sure. But brought to St. Helena from the Seychelles in 1882. Although his age is unverified, so his date of birth isn't clear, there's a picture. There's definitely a photo of him in 1886. And at the time, they can look at the photo and say, well, he's a fully mature adult tortoise, and it takes about 50 years for them to get that age. They know he's definitely very close to about 200 years old. He made international news in 2017 when it was discovered that his mate, Frederica, is actually a male giant tortoise. Making Jonathan the oldest gay in history. Which is amazing.
Good luck. Hang on. What is 188 in gay years? Because I think that's older than the age of the universe.
Yeah, in gay years, absolutely, yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, as the article needlessly points out, the gender reveal explains why the pair have not been able to produce offspring. And Jonathan's lifespan has spanned seven British monarchs. William IV was the British king at the time of his birth. 52 British prime ministers and 39 US presidents. It's madness, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah. Not the oldest animal. Some bowhead whales are thought to live over 200 years. And the oldest animal of all is thought to be a quahog clam called Ming, who was 507 years old when it was caught and killed in order to figure out how old it was.
No! Human beings! Terrible, terrible, stupid monkeys!
It was called Ming because that was the dynasty of Chinese emperors that was on the throne at the time. Lord Byron? Anyone know what pets Lord Byron had?
I mean, this worries me that this is a QI klaxon moment, but he had a bear.
He did have a bear. No, genuinely he did. In 1805, he became a student at Trinity College, Cambridge, and the college authorities told him that pet dogs were banned, and he had a devoted pet dog, as we'll talk about in a bit. But he was so annoyed, he brought a tame bear instead, because they didn't have any laws or rules saying you couldn't have a pet bear.
Love it. Getting them on the small print.
Yeah, he stayed with him in his lodgings. He'd walk it around the grounds of Trinity on a chain. And he not only that, he wrote to a friend saying, I've got a new friend, the finest in the world, a tame bear. When I brought him here, they asked me what I meant to do with him. And my reply was, he should sit for a fellowship. He had cats and dogs, monkeys, a crocodile, peacocks, badgers, several birds of prey. But the animal he loved most of all was a Newfoundland dog called Boatswain. And when Boatswain caught rabies, apparently Byron nursed him without any concern for his own safety of being bitten. And when the dog was died, he commissioned a monument to Boatswain, which I think is...
Which will be getting pulled down.
He's an indigenous Newfoundlander, I would think.
Oh, that's right then.
I think the monument to Boatswain is bigger than Byron's own tomb as well. And he wrote in his will he wanted to be buried next to the dog. Sadly, he wasn't. Byron's buried in St. Mary Magdalene Church in Hucknall, and the dog is buried at Newstead Abbey, which is Byron's estate. But he did write Epitaph to a Dog, which is inscribed on Boatswain's tomb as well, which finishes with the words, "To mark a friend's remains, these stones arise. I never knew but one, and here he lies."
Oh.
Imagine if one of Byron's like human friends, though. <He's> like, dude, you could have written a nice poem for my grave, but the dog...
I've decided just this second that if there is a stand-up circuit to go back to, if I ever get heckled by someone, I'm just going to respond to it by reading Byron's Epitaph to a Dog to them.
I think it's quite a widespread idea that Oscar Wilde had a pet lobster. That is not true.
No.
People are confusing him with the French poet Gerard de Nerval. But because Nerval is not as well known as Oscar Wilde, people have gone, oh no, he's more famous. We'll say he had a lobster instead.
I thought you meant that's what they were confusing it with. Like, no, there was another poet he had, not a lobster.
That's right. Yeah, the lobster.
He's a very red man.
Yeah. Oscar Wilde kept Gerard de Nerval on a leash.
It wasn't a lobster at all.
Yeah. Nerval apparently took a pet lobster. He was be seen taking the pet lobster for walks in the gardens of the Palais Royal in Paris. He had it on the end of a long blue ribbon. And word of this spread, and he was challenged to explain himself. And he said, "And what could be quite so ridiculous as making a dog, a cat, a gazelle, a lion, or any other beast follow one around? I have affection for lobsters. They are tranquil, serious, and they know the secrets of the sea." Basically, he's sort of satirizing the idea that humankind could have any control over the natural world and the animal kingdom in general, is that if you can have cats and dogs, why can't I have a lobster, basically?
It's just against the claw.
Yeah.
But then also, that's true, but then that's a ridiculous animal to make that point with. Fair enough. If he had a lion and he was walking, he'd go, what's the difference between that and a dog? Like, fair enough. But a lobster's such a slow-moving animal.
Yeah.
You can't walk at the same pace with a lobster than you can with a spaniel. He's a moron.
It's dragging rather than walking, isn't it?
It's an aquatic animal.
Yeah.
You're in a field.
He wrote a letter to a friend of his after he'd been to the coastal town of La Rochelle saying, "I was accosted by the mayor who demanded that I should make a full and frank apology for stealing from the lobster nets. I will not bore you with the rest of the story, but suffice to say that reparations were made and little Thibaut is now here with me in the city." Thibaut the lobster, liberated from the lobster nets in La Rochelle.
There was also, of course, famously, Salvador Dali had a pet aardvark.
No, he had an aardvark as well, mate.
Did he?
Yeah. So, and now you've mentioned an ocelot, I've, of course, allowed to tell the greatest joke of all time, which is, how do you titillate an ocelot? Oscillate its tits a lot.
It is indeed the greatest joke of all time, empirically. We won't take any emails on that subject. I bet, Dali with an aardvark. Did he give the aardvark a little, like, moustache as well? A little pencil moustache with a little twirly bit at the end.
No, he melted it. There's nothing greater than the delicacy of aardvark fondue.
One of the things, if you're a pet owner, you want is your pet to make you millions. If you like, it's, you know the way you get pushy cinema parents and pushy theatre parents? You can have pushy pet owners as well. I presume, or I hope you've all heard
you
of
do.
Yeah.
You do. Ben must have been in an audition at one point with animals in there as well, have you?
Yeah.
I haven't. Have you?
Yeah, I did didn't get it, but I did an audition for a Pets at Home advert, and there was the waiting room consisted of people one side and dogs the other.
And was there the referee from Gladiators the middle going, contenders, ready.
Dogs, you will go on my first whistle.
Sit. And the dogs are like, mate, you better have the right whistle.
Yes.
Yeah. It wasn't a whistle, it was a squeaky toy.
Nice,
it,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, and you get the people that own them are very much like, and you know in auditions you get tell the kind of person they're looking from the people in there. It was the same with the dog. They were all very similar looking.
Nice.
Oh, please tell me that it was kind of like 50 wolfhounds and one little pug just going, I'm going to sack my agent tomorrow.
I'm not getting this.
Mate, you're here for the wrong one.
Yeah. Well, maybe the most famous cinema dog and cinema pet animal in general is Rin Tin Tin, who was a German Shepherd, was found in France in 1918 by an American soldier, Lee Duncan. And when the war was over, you know, during the First World War, Duncan brought him back home to Southern California and spent hours every day teaching him and training him. Like many people in the early 1920s, he was living in California. The movie industry in Hollywood was just building up at the time, only a few miles away from his home. So he wrote a screenplay set in the Sierra Nevada mountains for, as a, like a vehicle for Rin Tin Tin, and was like shopping it around from studio to studio. And eventually Warner Brothers bought it. This film was Where the North Begins in 1923, casting Rinty, as he was known, in the leading role, and it was the start of a very lucrative career. Rin Tin Tin did 16 pictures for Warner Brothers between 1923 and 1928, and then 9 more when the talkies, or the barkies, if you will, came in 1928 until he died in 1931. And they were so successful that apparently studio producers and insiders used to call Rin Tin Tin the mortgage lifter. Because the proceeds of his movies would just bail the studio out again and again. In 1926.
So, like, obviously, we're all suffering from the fact that the art sector has been neglected by the government. Are we suggesting that what arts venues up and down the country need is to adopt their own charismatic, talented dog who will pull them out of recession?
I mean, that feels like one of Oliver Dowden, Culture Minister's five-point plan suggestions, really, at this point in time. By 1926, Rin Tin Tin was earning about $6,000 a week, which these days is $77,000.
A week? So he was on the wages of a top-class Premier League footballer?
More than most of his human stars, his co-stars, were earning at the time. He did celebrity endorsements for Kennel Ration dog food, and gossip columnists wrote about him, his wife, in inverted commas, Nanette, and their puppies as though they were human, and they would often be sent, like, publicity photos of them sitting like humans at tables with their paws out in front of them and things like that.
And then some chimps in Yorkshire saw that and thought, I've got an idea.
Yeah. There is a rumour that in 1929, in the voting for the first Academy Awards, that Rin Tin Tin actually received the most votes for Best Actor. Obviously, that
please
didn't
tell
go
me
to...
that they gave him an honorary trophy for being a good boy.
Yeah, yeah, you'd hope so. There was a set of awards for animals on film. I can't remember what they're called, but they did exist. But they were formed after Rin Tin Tin had died. He did also get a radio show to which he contributed. He contributed the barks starting in 1930, although he didn't do many of the barks. There was a human actor who did most of the canine sound effects. Would you like to guess what the human actor's name was?
If it... Max?
No.
Charles Barkley?
Bob Barker. Genuinely.
He wasn't allowed to do any other job.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Rin Tin Tin, when he died in 1932, his son Rin Tin Tin Jr. took over on the radio show. When Rinty died, he made international news headlines. His death had a national response in the United States, with regular programming being interrupted by a news bulletin and an hour-long program about Rin Tin Tin playing the next day. And in a ceremony in 1960, Rin Tin Tin was given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Wow.
That's the most normal part of this story so far.
Yeah. And his his son Rin Tin Tin 2 took over to make the Rin Tin Tin dynasty.
Yeah, Rin Tin Tin Jr. starred in a few films, was less successful. Rin Tin Tin the Third starred alongside Robert Blake in 1947's The Return of Rin Tin Tin, and actually Rin Tin Tin the Third wasn't so good on film, but he was used a lot by Duncan in training 5,000 dogs for the World War II effort in California. So he used his training skills to train dogs to be sent to war. I think the current Rin Tin Tin is like Rin Tin Tin the 12th or something, and he is a spokes dog for the American Humane Association, and they're the ones at the end of Hollywood films tend to certify that no animals were harmed in the making of this film and things like that. So the dynasty exists and continues on to this day. But my world's worst pet is going to be the pet rock. Ben's just done a little gasp. Remember pet rocks were a thing? A collectible toy, in inverted commas, made in 1975 by advertising executive Gary Dahl. The original pet rocks are all from Mexico's Rosarito Beach, the very smooth stones, smoothed by the incoming and outgoing tide. And they were marketed like live pets. This is the thing. It wasn't just, get any rock and make it a pet. He was as someone said, he invented a box rather than the pet rock, because they would be sold in a custom cardboard box with breathing holes in it and straw in it, and with like little instructions on how to keep it. And the fad, I mean, it was proper 70s. The fad was like 6 months, ended after the Christmas season had gone. By February 1976, all the pet rocks had been discounted due to the interest in them has just plummeted post Christmas. But he had already sold a million pet rocks for $4 each.
Yes.
I've read an interesting article about it. It says Vietnam was over, but Watergate was still in people's minds, and basically everything was a little bit sad and depressed in America, and it was a nice, inane, very disposable, idiotic little thing that could just cheer people up. It was amazing. He had a couple of investors who'd invested $10,000 each. One of the investors made back $200,000. Dahl even gifted both of them a Mercedes car each. He basically made 95% profit on every pet rock. And he launched his own firm called Rock Bottom Productions, particularly so that the receptionist could answer the phone saying, "You've reached rock bottom."
I have so much time for this man. So much time.
In 1976, he tried to launch a bicentennial version to celebrate America's 200th birthday with the American flag painted on it and mail order college degrees.
Surely he should have done a series of rocks to look like Mount Rushmore.
That would have been, that'd be good. He sold pet rock t-shirts, pet rock shampoo. Obviously there were copycat versions of it because you can't really patent a rock. Someone said he could have patented the idea of a rock as a companion, but he didn't bother. He also launched a few other novelty gifts. He had the official sand breeding kit for how to grow sand, and canned earthquake, a coffee can with a wind-up thing in it that makes it jump around on the table. And his real passion, though, was buying and renovating a bar in Los Gatos, which he named Carrie Nation's Saloon. If you don't know who Carrie Nation is, I really encourage everyone to go read her Wikipedia page, because Carrie Nation was an American activist and member of the radical temperance movement. So naming a bar after her is a brilliant stroke of genius. She was most famous for attacking bars with a hatchet, smashing in the barrels that used to contain the beer and alcohol in them. Dahl pointed out to people that, a rock doesn't need to be fed, walked, bathed or groomed. It wouldn't be sick or die or be disobedient. And he used to sell like a manual on how to care for it with things like, how to train it. With lots of stupid gags on how to make it do certain tricks. Sit and stay are obviously fairly easy to make it do. Rollover requires little help from the trainer. Come, stand and shake hands are found to be near impossible to teach, and attack is fairly simple with some additional help from the owner's own force.
This took me a while. I'm going to talk about two, and I'm going to hopefully have picked one by the end to give my actual worst one. They're not going to sound like horrible pets, but I've worked with them both, and I can assure you they're the worst pet you could ever want.
I'm going with
an otter.
How dare you?
Yeah, exactly, right? I don't want this to be the reason I'm cancelled, but otters are not, like, They're cute and cuddly when you look at them, right? But A, they're hyper-aggressive. They're very territorial. You would not be able to go near an otter if to feed it, to do anything with it. They're cute on camera. They're not cute close up. They also the ultimate omnivores. So they eat everything from vegetables to fish, to meat, to insects, plant matter, everything, which means their feces is some of the worst smell. Yeah. Out of all the animals I had to clean out in the zoo, otters was the one where I was like, I genuinely don't want to do this job. Got to the point where when health and safety was getting more like kind of established into the zoos in probably about 2010, things were being re-looked on how we... The otter clean-out procedure was one of the top priorities for PPE to be worn. I'm probably was having to wear better PPE than our NHS nurses have had to wear in the last couple of weeks to clear out otters, because the ammonia is so strong that walking in it, your eyes would just water and you would lose your breath. You had to wear masks, goggles, gloves, and everything. And it was that kind of smell that once it was on you for the day.
Wow.
Disgusting. And all that time, whilst you're trying to clean them out, they're biting at your ankles, trying to get you because you're in their territory.
So this whole thing about pictures that I've seen on various social media of, you know, otters are cute, look at them sleeping and holding hands, it's all just propaganda from Big Otter.
Yeah, I mean, they're cute animals. I'd never say they're not cute. They're amazing. They're really intelligent and they're really in tune with their environment, but only in their environment. If you tried to put one in a domestic setting as a pet, it would be one of the worst decisions because they don't. they sleep where they shit. So if you want it sleeping on the bed with you, right? So that's they're just not. I don't think you'd ever be able to domesticate them. There's a reason why farmers in Asia hate them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Asian short-clawed otters are listed vulnerable on the IUCN, so the red list for endangered animals. Listed as vulnerable, mainly because they're hunted so much, because they just cause so much damage, which obviously I don't agree, you know, it's their natural habitat, but they destroy areas, they eat crops, they shit everywhere, and they're very aggressive.
I've just had a look here. Apparently a 2011 study of otter attacks has found only 39 documented violent confrontations between humans and otters dating back to 1875, so over the course of 140 years or so. Most have occurred in the last 20 years, nearly half of those in Florida. And mainly the only known fatalities have occurred in captivity when otters killed intruders to protect their cubs.
Right. Now, would you expect that from an otter?
No.
One's too many.
The same article talks about how the North American river otter is capable of eating crocodiles.
Excuse me?
Apparently, and it's because it's a result of their tenacity. The otter wears down the gator during an hours-long struggle. So it's that thing of how you take down like a heavyweight boxer. You just keep running and running and running and make them tire them out, and eventually...
Are you telling me that the otter's modus operandi is rope-a-dope? that you know, when it came to Ali versus George Foreman in The Rumble in the Jungle, like, suddenly there was lots of strange betting patterns going on from swampland. Just loads of otters going, Ali's got this. He's got it sewn up.
They were just lucky it was in the jungle and not in the wetlands.
Yeah.
They're amazing animals, but they are truly some of the most difficult ones to, from a professional level, to work with.
They're really hyper. They're very energetic, aren't they?
Very energetic. And like I said, the level of intelligence means the level of enrichment you have to give to these animals. You know, you can just feed them, but you really have to train their brain to figure out how to get food, because otherwise the boredom level will reach to a certain level, which means the behavior will start to change from what you don't want. And I can't. Working in the zoo, speaking to members of the public all the time, going, I'd love an otter. And I'm just sitting there going, I give it a day.
Yeah.
I give it a full day. And you change your mind. Like, that's they're very difficult. And my second animal, I am going to say that my second animal, which I think will win over the otter, is any kind of parrot.
Ah, now they're much more common as pets. Why would you, why would you say no to parrots?
Talking about long-lived animals, parrots live a lot longer than people think they do. They live, the average age is between 65 and 70 years for an African grey parrot, which is probably one of the most common parrot species as a pet. They also, again with the intelligence, have the brain of about a 3 to 4 year old human child. They have that ability to be able to figure out problems. They can talk, they can do number problems. They're really intelligent. But that means that you're willing to have a 4 year old child for 70 years. And I think if you're making that kind of judgment call, that's on you. But that's not what, and also a lot of parrots show their affection by regurgitating matter out of their beak. So if they like you, they just vomit.
So if you have a parrot, you've got a caged, amorously vomiting toddler who also entertains itself by repeatedly hammering a bell.
Exactly, yeah, right. And you can't let them out to fly. You can, but if you don't do it right, they're gone.
There's in 2016, the world's longest lived parrot died. That was Cookie, the cockatoo, who was 83 at Brookfield Zoo in Illinois. That's long enough for a parrot to, like, 40 to change your will to leave it. Your fortune.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this is the thing. We don't expect birds, exotic birds like that, to live that long. You don't really know about that information. So people buy them quite... And it's the same with tortoises. There's still a lot of people that don't realise how long they live. I know people that have now got parrots because their parents had parrots.
And it's just been passed on to them.
Been given the parrot.
Oh, that is the worst kind of parrot, isn't it? An inherited parrot.
Inherited parrot. Yeah. My one thing about, just to go back to otters for one second, just because I remember this, is that when I go to London Zoo, my husband worked there very briefly as a groundskeeper, and said the way to get the animals to come up to you when you're looking at them is to wear green, because all the zookeepers wear green. And so they'd see, particularly the cleverer animals like the otters, they'd see you wearing green stood by their enclosure and they'd think they were going to be fed. So they'd all crowd up to you.
There's some, actually, we had when I was working with the otters at Chessington Zoo, there was a certain whistle we would do. I don't know, I can't remember why we did it. Probably just for fun, which I can probably safely say that now I'm not working there. But it was probably purely just for fun to entertain ourselves. We'd do a slight whistle that was like... that kind of whistle, and they would come running out, and I could walk past in my civvies if I was just visiting the zoo or just coming in for a meeting off on my day off or something, do that whistle, and they would come running up to me even though I'm not in uniform. I could be in a shirt like this and they would hear that whistle come running out.
You're an otter whisperer.
Whistler.
Whistler. Yes.
And the other thing is, have you had parrots talk to you?
There was not personally. I've been there with parrots. So my lecturer at university he brought his parrot in. It's kind of really, there's an interesting study with it because we don't know if it's talking / just repeating. I guess that's what talking is, really. That's language, isn't it, if we're really going to define it. But it's just kind of repeating sounds and associations, really. It's not really what we don't know how much they know what they're saying.
Yeah.
Rather than it's been trained in, so they know if they say the certain thing at the certain time, they get a reward. So it's kind of like a dog giving a paw or a sit-in. It's exactly the same thing, just presented through noise rather than behaviour.
I think there's something along the lines of that parrots, because birds are flock creatures by and large, that if you're on your own, then you're dead. There's no way of you.
Yes.
You can't get the food that you need. So parrots will do whatever they can to integrate whatever they're surrounding. So if they're surrounded by humans in a household, then they'll try and mimic and blend in with the humans there to become one of the flock.
And there's loads of birds that do that. You've got mimic birds that will, if they're living past, let's say you've got a few of them that live near a motorway, they'll be doing the noises of cars and machinery and stuff like that. They will mimic it because it's in their environment. Or when they're in zoos, they'll do impressions of the lion roaring because it's just... what they do, it's how they communicate, it's how they attract mates a lot of the time as well.
Oh, so what you're saying is they're just like, they're the ultimate social butterfly. They just want to fit in. They're the person at a party just work in the room.
Yeah. The ultimate impressionist. That's what they do.
There is apparently a African grey parrot called Waldo, which has been part of a band called Hatebeak. The drummer Blake Harrison has told Vice, "We got him dehydrated banana chips and he pieced it together and called them banana crackers on his own. It's a little creepy." So yeah, apparently this bird is in. I'm now going to Google the band Hatebeak.
Do it. Can I give one more? I'm going to go with parrot as my ultimate answer. But can I give one more that would be a terrible pet?
Yeah,
please do.
From what you said with the long-lived point of view, there's if we're looking at animals not being great pets because they live so long, the longest, I think this is up there with the longest living animal known, is the Greenland shark. That lives around Greenland, but they can be found as south as Florida and those oceans in the Atlantic as well. They can live up to over 400 years old. And they don't reach sexual maturity until about 160. So they would be terrible pets to have.
Imagine waiting 160 years to have sex, though.
Yeah. Imagine that puberty.
Oh my God. Never ending. I've just looked it up. Hatebeak is a grindcore band. They never tour because they don't want to torture their parrot. They're reported to be the first band to have an avian vocalist, according to their Wikipedia page.
Believed to be.
They've released... the band members are Mark Sloan, guitar, bass, Blake Harrison, drums, Waldo the Parrot, brackets, vocals. Their discography includes Beak of Putrefaction, Bird Seeds of Vengeance, The Thing That Shall Not Beak, Number of the Beak, Birdhouse, and Birdhouse by the Cemetery.
I mean, if they had any real sense of bravery, then on that list of what instruments they play, it would be, and Walter the Parrot, brackets, saxophone. We're going to start off by going to the White House, because it turns out quite a lot of presidents had quite a lot of really stupid pets. First of all, let's talk about Thomas Jefferson, who had a couple of bears. A gentleman with one of the finest names in all of history, Captain Zebulon Pike, who was an intrepid explorer who headed out into uncharted Western territory. Of course, when I say uncharted, I mean uncharted by the invasive species known as white Americans. He went out into the Mississippi River, all the way up to Arkansas, and as a present for Thomas Jefferson, he brought back a pair of young grizzly bears, a male and a female. The president thanked him for that, and he placed them in a cage near the north entrance of the White House that became known as the Bear Garden.
However, these bears became increasingly angry, and so Jefferson...
What, with what, his monetary policy? What was... They were warning about the impending war with the British?
They were actually... Well, you know, they were bears that were, again, natives who'd been oppressed by the invading white Americans, so they were very angry with Manifest Destiny. So he handed them over to a chap called Charles Wilson Peale, who was a noted American painter who had opened up a museum that had a cabinet of curiosities in there, which was seen as a way of displaying, as was the habit of the Enlightenment age, all sorts of different things. So the president basically said, "Here you go, have a couple of bears. They're perfectly gentle, I assure you." But even there, the bears outgrew their cage and began threatening the family. And so eventually they had to be shot and the skins were mounted and put on display at the museum there.
Did you say a guy called Peale took their skin off?
Peale. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Talking about parrots, as Ryan did, President Andrew Jackson had a foul-mouthed pet grey parrot called Poll, and Jackson was a deeply religious man, and Poll would piss him off by blurting out offensive swear words that he'd clearly picked up off one of Jackson's soldiers who visited him. Calvin Coolidge had a pygmy hippopotamus in amongst a huge menagerie, which included 6 dogs, a bobcat, a goose, a donkey, a cat, 2 lion cubs, an antelope, and a wallaby.
2 bobcats and then 1 cat in the midst of the guy.
This is what I find bizarre, the numbers of stuff. Why do you have 2 lion cubs but then 1 goose? Like, yeah. What happened to the other goose?
To keep the goose cornered.
Yeah.
Billy was eventually donated to the Smithsonian, where he quickly went to work as a stud and sired 23 further hippos. And it's believed that if you see a pygmy hippo in America today, it is likely to be a descendant of Billy. So Billy is very much the Genghis Khan of American pygmy hippos. Herbert Hoover had a pair of gaiters. He was inspired by John Quincy Adams, who also had a pet gaiter that was a gift from the Marquis de Lafayette. The gaiter lived in the bathroom of the East Room of the White House.
Where's the bathroom, Herbert? Oh, just down, second one on the left. Don't go to the third one on the left.
Yeah.
Don't go in room X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else was there in there? There was Pauline. Pauline was the last cow to live at the White House.
Make your own jokes, listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying a word.
She was a working cow. She made milk for President Taft's consumption. Taft was the really overweight one, wasn't he?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so I imagine once she'd finished making milk, Taft just ate her in three bites.
Ben, that was the hardest my brain's ever had to stop about making any comment on the current political going on in the White House right then with that sentence.
But also, there's always when the new president arrises, there always seems to be always the president going to get a dog story. Or like Bill Clinton had Socks the cat, which I'm quoting Graham Norton here, was the only pussy in the White House Hillary didn't mind him stroking. but I feel like it would be so much more interesting if the question was not just is the president getting a dog, it's what animal is the president going to get as a pet?
Exactly. And whether it be sort of other cultures where the animal has different auspiciousness about it. Like if the president gets a guinea pig and go, but it's the year of the rat. What is he doing? This is madness. just a couple more animals because this list gets better. Martin Van Buren received two tiger cubs as a gift from the Sultan of Oman, and Congress made him give them as a gift to a zoo.
Yeah.
Abigail Adams, John Adams' wife, had two dogs. One was called Juno. Any guess as to what the other one was called?
The answer? Juno, no. The answer?
Very good. Brian?
No.
Is it going to be Jupiter? Juno and Jupiter?
Abigail Adams' other dog was called Satan. Two last lot to tell you about. Teddy Roosevelt received a bear cub as a gift from supporters in West Virginia. The bear cub was called Jonathan Edwards and would later go on to break the triple jump world record. Teddy Roosevelt wrote to a friend that he believed that he received the bear from his West Virginian supporters because, and I quote, partly because they thought they detected Calvinistic traits in the bear's character.
Roosevelt
believed
also
in predestination, did this bear, didn't it?
Yes, of course. Roosevelt also had three guinea pigs named Dr. Johnson, Bishop Doan, and Fighting Bob Evans.
And last of all, a pet badger called Josiah.
I have to mention a couple of his other pets. He had a one-legged rooster, a zebra, some parrots and pigs and lions, and a hyena. But my favourite was his daughter, Alice, had a snake whose name was Emily Spinach.
So, given the number of American presidents that seem to have had bears, has that got anything to do with where the right to bear arms is coming from?
Very possibly. I feel like there have been more presidential pets than presidents.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, well, it sounds like there, right?
Next, I wanted to talk about something that's not strictly a pet, but has been briefly owned by so many people. I sort of feel that it could be. And this is Benson.
And Benson lived
the TV series.
No, not the TV series, Benson.
Benson lived from 1984 to August 2009, and Benson was Britain's biggest and, I don't know how they have measured this, best-loved carp. she lived in the River Neen and was accompanied by another female who was genuinely called Hedges. Both of them were named after a hole in Benson's dorsal fin that resembled a cigarette burn.
Oh, no.
That was put there intentionally.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope not. And Benson was so popular because she was just a whore for the bait. In 13 years, she was caught 63 times. And she was much loved because carps are enormous fish, so you get to have like that money shot photo of you with a disgustingly large fish. And so she was often referred to as the people's fish. And in 2005, Angler's Mail gave her the title of Britain's favourite carp. However, sorry, I had to gather myself as to what I was talking about there. She controversially died in 2009 at the age of 25. And at the time, she weighed the same as a large dog and was worth £20,000. But there was controversy about her death because it was believed that she may have been accidentally or possibly deliberately poisoned using uncooked tiger nuts as bait because there was ingredients in tiger nuts that were poisonous to carps. However, it was also considered after a genuine post-mortem that she may have been killed due to complications during egg production.
A post-mortem on a fish.
Yep.
Who did they get to do? Who did they get to do that?
They got
Michelle Rue Jr.
Yeah. He pronounced her delicious. Yeah.
Oh yeah, one brief one I want to tell you about. Prince Rupert of the Rhine, who was a royalist commander during the Civil War, and he owned a much beloved white hunting poodle called Boy, who was trained to cock his leg and urinate on cue whenever the name of the enemy commander Pym was spoken. His reputation was widespread, not just because of his Pavlovian powers, but because Puritan propagandists claimed that he was actually Satan in disguise. I would like to point out that is the actual adversary in disguise, not a time-travelling version of one of Abigail Adams's dogs. And they also claimed that Boy was immune to bullets.
Wow. How did they prove that?
Yeah, prove it.
Yeah.
My selection for World's Worst is someone that you'll all have heard of, because my selection is still with us. They were born on April the 30th, 1983, just 14 days before myself. They have travelled the world, accompanying one of the greatest entertainers the world has ever known. They are, of course, Bubbles, the chimpanzee.
Yeah.
And this is a story full with pathos and tragedy. He was bought by Michael Jackson from a Texas research facility in the 1980s, so I'm guessing that Michael Jackson was trying to pull for Bubbles what it was a breakout.
was there an Ocean's 11 style like heist to get Bubbles out?
Bubbles plinth. And then Michael just lowered from the ceiling.
Yes.
Grabbed him back up.
Replaced him with a statue of a monkey with its hands over its mouth.
Bubbles had a very close relationship with Jackson. He slept in a crib in Michael Jackson's bedroom. He used Michael Jackson's toilet and would sit in the Neverland movie theatre and eat candy. The problem was, like so many pets, he was cute and adorable as a baby chimp. But by 2003, he'd grown to be a large and aggressive adult chimpanzee and was eventually sent to live with a Californian animal trainer. And when that trainer closed their operation, Bubbles moved to the Center for Great Apes, which is a sanctuary in Florida. And I'll tell you more about his retirement later on. But a little bit more about his life. There's a quote I found from Quincy Jones, who defends both Michael Jackson and Bubbles, saying that the public perception of Michael has been highly exaggerated. Those articles were hard for me to relate to. For instance, Bubbles is more fun than a lot of people I know. I saw Bubbles at a wedding in a tux. He has great table manners. It is alleged that Bubbles had his own agent and was rumoured to have his own bodyguard. He sat in on the recording of the album Bad, and Jackson insisted on playing back tracks to Bubbles to get his approval.
You know what, guys? It's a wonder we didn't think something was wrong with Michael Jackson sooner, because all of this behaviour is so normal.
So very by the book. Bubbles made a cameo appearance in a short film called Liberian Girl. And
We've talked about that
in the World's Worst video.
Yeah, it's the terrible one which has loads of famous people in it, and then at the end it pans out and like the director is Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
That was basically a chance for him to go, look how many famous people I know.
Yeah, and they're all there just going, maybe if we do this for him, he'll start acting normal again.
Yeah.
This is my favourite story about it. Bubbles accompanied Michael Jackson on his world tour, and when they were in Tokyo, they went off and made a special visit to Osaka, and they met the mayor of Osaka, Yasushi Oshima, and there Bubbles drank Japanese green tea while sat quietly next to Jackson. Oshima said that he and his fellow officials were surprised to see the chimpanzee, but we understand he is Michael's good friend. This is the first time an animal has ever entered City Hall. Jackson also brought Bubbles to tea at Elizabeth Taylor's house, and Taylor didn't mind. And apparently at a party to celebrate and promote Bad, Bubbles was reported as working the room and was the life of the party.
Who did you say he met when he was in Japan?
He met the mayor of Osaka.
Okay, because I was just thinking that, I don't know what year that was, but in 1992, George Bush Sr. vomited in the lap of the Japanese Prime Minister. So Bubbles the chimp had better table manners than the President of America at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that was the lowest point in US-Japanese relations since 1941.
Yeah.
So, yeah, obviously, Bubbles had to be taken away to the Center for Great Apes in Florida, and he is now said to enjoy painting and listening to flute music. Of course he does. So, just because he grew into a difficult pet, but... just, you know, what he was masking. And also, well, I must say, what he was masking, clearly Bubbles was complicit in some of the awful things going on at Neverland Ranch. So because he also didn't possess a moral compass and didn't come forward to reveal what his owner was doing, I'm going to say that he lived a sad life where he was used as a mask for greater crimes, but also didn't have the bravery to come forward to reveal what Jackson was doing. I'm going to say that the world's worst pet was Bubbles the chimp.
Our world's worst pet for our guest judge, Annela, to decide which is the winner, as Barry's of the 1970s Tamagotchi, the pet rock. Ryan's of the airborne toddler, the humble parrot. And mine of the chimp who wasn't brave enough to reveal the crimes at Neverland Ranch, Bubbles. Annela, over to you.
Well, that is quite the selection, and I'm really surprised Tamagotchis didn't make an appearance, actually. Oh. I almost had money on that being one of them. Before I make my decision, I wouldn't be a good nerdy worst foot forward listener if I hadn't done my own tiny bit of research.
Absolutely.
Oh, great.
So, rather than denigrate an entire genre of animals, I figured I would go for a specific pet that I read about, which unfortunately I don't have the name of, and it's two pets in particular. So there's a lady in Ohio who is the proud owner of two ferrets and a black Labrador. And apparently one afternoon, whilst looking after the Labrador and putting the food out for it, she left the ferrets unattended. And when she returned, she noticed that her phone was on. And when she looked on it, one of the ferrets had managed to order a Samsung Galaxy S4 phone using Amazon OneClick. What makes it even better, however, is she went to try and cancel the order and the other ferret stepped on the power strip and switched the router off. I just think that's just A, why, you know, I was talking to somebody about this earlier and we did go through the whole, if you were going to have a pet, why would it be a ferret? And then if you're going to have ferrets, why would you pick ferrets who go behind your back and order stuff on the internet?
Wow.
You know,
this sounds like more of an excuse she gave her husband for a brand new phone.
Although there is a wonderful photo where she's put a picture of the two ferrets with little notes in front of them saying, I order stuff off the internet, and the other one just has, and I switch off the router after he's done it. Shamed them, which I thought was quite cute.
Apparently, ferrets have been domesticated for maybe longer than the household cat. There's certainly records of them in ancient Greece as early as 450 BC.
They're good hunters for farming. They hunt different things, yeah. They can get down tunnels. Yeah.
And they're really tech savvy as well.
Yeah.
So the three selections. I'm afraid, Ben, I'm going to have to rule out Bubbles straight away, mainly because I don't think it was his fault. He didn't ask for any of this.
Yeah.
He was, you know, Michael Jackson did save him from, you know, an awful lab, but what happened to him afterwards, I don't think we can blame him. So I'm gonna take Bubbles out of the equation. I was all ready to go straight for the pet rock until Barry uttered the words, "Hello, you've reached rock bottom." And that just got me. I just thought that was great. And I've really changed my opinions on otters, and I don't know how to feel about that. I'm leaning towards parrots, and I feel bad for that because I've never met a parrot. I don't know anyone who owns a parrot, but your description of them just sounds so horrific that I'm not sure I can ever imagine why anybody in their right mind would want to own one. So I think, although the rock is truly ridiculous and just a ridiculous idea and a stupid thing, at least it doesn't live for 80 years. And
but how long do you think erosion takes?
this is true.
79 years max.
Yes, 79 years. Depends on the rock, you see. But yeah, sounds a bit true. Of granite.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to go for parrots because they just sound dreadful.
Absolutely, they really do. And also, the only notable exception I can think of is, imagine you go to university, it's Freshers Week, you meet someone, they seem kind of nice, maybe a little overeager, and then they tell you they own a parrot. You know that they're either then going to reveal themselves to be a magician, an evangelical Christian, or worse of all, a magician who is also an evangelical Christian. So, well done, Ryan, and commiserations to anyone stupid enough to own a parrot. Before we go, it's time for the world's best news of the week, and we go to Finland, because the Finnish Air Force have got the vibe of 2020, and because the Finnish Air Force have finally caught up with how an international air force should act post-1945 and have been a useful tonic to some of the worst trends of 2020. You guys might not know this, but the Finnish Air Force Command has, or had rather, until today, a swastika as part of its official logo. Now, they claim it was nothing to do with Nazism. It has been there since 1918, and it was an emblem that they traced back to Norse swastikas. Now, that's sort of fair enough, but you think they might drop it in, you know, after it had been tainted by the Nazis. But also, the reason they have it is that it was
to commemorate the donation of a plane to Finland by the Swedish Count Erik von Rosen, who had the swastika as his own personal good luck charm, and he had it painted on the wings of his planes. Erik von Rosen was an upper-class explorer, ethnographer, ding, 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 and brother-in-law to Hermann Göring, dong, 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 dong.
And so, obviously, I'm a little bit angry that the Finnish Air Force didn't get rid of that immediately, but, you know, I'm going to take whatever progress I can get in 2020. So, well done, Finland, for having a slightly less fascist Air Force than you did yesterday. Before we go, Anla, where can people find you, and perhaps what can they find about what you're doing when they get there?
Well, they can't find me in the lab at the moment because it's kind of not really open, but they can find me on Twitter on @pingasaurus. I do quite a lot of talks at things like science festivals, which I do post about on Twitter when we ever have science festivals again, but I do quite a lot of public engagement and science communication stuff, so if people are interested in that, follow me. The rest of it, I'm afraid, is just swearing, cats and crochet, so.
And Ryan, where can people find you?
You can find me on social media at Mr. Ryan J. Dalton, and you can also check out my podcast, Into the Wild, which is a wildlife and nature podcast with interviews with professionals from professors, presenters, authors, scientists, doctorates in the wildlife and animal industry.
That sounds thoroughly tremendous. We're all off to see if we can persuade Dwayne The Rock Johnson to dress as a parrot to make the worst pet possible. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.